Hello students. So here comes the fourth module of Thermodynamics Unit 6 Class 11th Chemistry. In the present module, we'll be discussing about thermochemical equations, Hess's law of constant heat summation, then what are the limitations of first law of thermodynamics, moving on to the concept of spontaneity and enthalpy change and spontaneity. Thermochemical equations, as the word indicates, that chemical reactions which are involving the energy change or heat change. So in these thermochemical equations, we consider the balanced equation for reactants and products. The value and appropriate sign of enthalpy change is given on the right hand side, and this value is delta H. So we write the delta H value for each chemical reaction. And physical state of reactants and products are specified by letters S for solid, L for liquid, G for gas, aqueous. So delta H reaction value refers to physical states of substances, those appear in the equation. So here we can see that 2H2O liquid gives 2H2 plus O2, H2 is gas, O2 is gas, and delta H is 572 kilojoules. So 572 kilojoules, that is positive energy is required. Then combustion of methane, where methane gas reacts with oxygen gas to form CO2 gas and water is released in vapor state, and delta H is minus 802 kilojoules. So thermochemical equations gives the information regarding the number of moles of substances which reacts and the number of moles of products formed, their physical states and the energy value, and whether the reaction is exothermic or endothermic. The given value of delta H reaction, it will tell us that reaction occurs in which direction. So suppose if the forward reaction has delta H as minus value, then the reverse reaction will be having the opposite sign, that is positive value. For example, you can see that methane combustion, the forward reaction enthalpy of reaction is in negative, and the reverse thermochemical equation, the sign changes and the value remains the same for the same number of moles. So that means we can say that an exothermic reaction on reversal becomes endothermic, or endothermic becomes exothermic. When the coefficients indicating the number of moles of all substances in thermochemical equations are multiplied or divided by a certain numerical factor, the corresponding enthalpy value should also be multiplied or divided or added accordingly. So we can see that 2A changes to 2B, and value of delta H for A to B, it is given 70, and that means the entire equation we have multiplied by 2. So the value of enthalpy becomes 70 into 2, that is 140 kilojoules. Let us do Hess's law of constant heat summation. Russian chemist Germain Henry Hess gave one of the most important generalization of thermochemistry in 1840, which is named after his name as Hess's law. Actually, generalization is primarily based on the fact that enthalpy is a path-independent thermodynamic function. It's a state function. So that means what? Enthalpy change in a chemical reaction is same whether it takes place in one step or more than one step. So we can say that change in enthalpy is same whether the reaction takes place in one step or series of steps. So, or we can say in other words, Hess's law is about what? The overall enthalpy change for a reaction is equal to sum of the enthalpy changes of individual steps in the reaction. Let us understand. See in this picture, what is reactant A is changing into reactant B, which is product B, and the total enthalpy change is represented by delta H. Now this can take place in more than one step. A is changing into C and enthalpy change is delta H1. C is changing into E and the enthalpy change is delta H2. E is again changing into B and enthalpy change is delta H3. So intermediate product 1C and intermediate product 2E, via these steps it reaches to B. So we can say that delta H overall enthalpy change for this reaction is what? Delta H1 plus delta H2 plus delta H3. So sum of all these enthalpies is equal to delta H, that is what? The Hess's law of constant heat summation. So what is the application of Hess's law? It allows us to carry out thermochemical calculations to predict enthalpies of various reactions whose direct measurement is not possible. So enthalpy of formation, children, where we can say that enthalpy of formation is just a theoretical concept where we write the data based on the constituent elements of that particular compound combines and forms one mole of substance. So through Hess's law we can calculate heat of formation. Then thermochemical reactions can be considered as algebraic equations, so they can be added, subtracted or multiplied by certain numerical factor, just like we do in algebraic equations. To apply Hess's law, all of the component steps of chemical reaction need to occur at the same temperature. That is important. And Hess's law may be used to calculate entropy and Gibbs energy in addition to enthalpy also. So that same thing, suppose delta G naught we have to calculate, or delta S entropy change also, using Hess's law, using these thermochemical equations or data and multiplying with the suitable coefficient if needed, can be calculated. We can determine that is standard enthalpies of formation, as I already told you, and which cannot be determined by calorimetric method. Then Hess's law, we can determine the enthalpy of formation by using other data of the cycle. So that, as I said, if enthalpies of combustion is given, or enthalpy of hydration is given, or solution is given, we can calculate the enthalpy of formation, which is otherwise difficult. See here in this example, what happens? The formation of sulfur trioxide. So it takes place in two steps. Overall reaction is what? S8 is reacting with oxygen to form SO3, and enthalpy of formation of this SO3 is minus 396 kilojoules per mole. It is taking place in two steps. You can see that S8 is reacting with O2, SO2 is formed, and for this delta H1 is minus 297 kilojoules. And then this SO2 is reacting with half molecule of O2 and it is giving SO3. So delta H2 is minus 99 kilojoules. So what happens? The total enthalpy change, we can say that we can add these two, that is formation of SO2 and formation of SO3. We can add these two values and we get finally the enthalpy of formation of SO3 using Hess's law. Okay, then we can calculate enthalpy of transition, like diamond to graphite or rhombic sulfur to monoclinic sulfur or red phosphorus to yellow phosphorus. So allotropic forms transition, that such enthalpies can be calculated by using Hess's law or by treating thermochemical equations as algebraic equations. So such reactions which are very slow and enthalpy change accompanying them cannot be calculated directly, can be calculated by Hess's law. Yes, so that is why it is useful for calculating enthalpy of transition. Let us see here, for example, let us calculate the enthalpy of the process sulfur rhombic to sulfur monoclinic from the enthalpies of combustion of monoclinic sulfur and rhombic sulfur, which have been found to be minus 296.4 and minus 295.1 kilojoules per mole respectively. Now Hess's law cycle is constituted as SR to SO2, that is, you can see path 1. So SR to SO2, we can have that path 1, and SR to SM to SO2, that is sulfur rhombic to monoclinic to SO2, path 2. So sulfur rhombic to monoclinic to SO2, path 2. So these changes we can see in the figure. So delta H1 and H2 is there. So we can say that delta H1, that is rhombic to SO2, and then sulfur monoclinic to SO2. So that means sulfur rhombic to monoclinic we can calculate, and that comes out to be minus 1.3 kilojoules. Okay. So in this way, transition can be calculated. We can determine standard enthalpy of reaction using Hess's law. That is, standard enthalpy of reaction is sum of the enthalpies of products minus sum of the enthalpies of reactants. So reactant changes to product, enthalpy of reaction can be calculated by this formula. Let us do one question here. Boron trioxide is reacting with water. It gives oxygen B2H6 and delta H is 2035 kilojoules per mole. H2O liquid is changing into H2O gas. Delta H is 44 kilojoules per mole. H2 plus half O2 gas H2O liquid delta H is equal to minus 286 kilojoules per mole. 2 boron solid and 3 H2 gas B2H6, that is formation of boron hydride. Delta H is 36 kilojoules per mole. So we have to find out the enthalpy of formation of boron trioxide, that is B plus O2, B2O3. So 2B plus 3 by 2 O2 gives 1 mole of B2O3. So we can see that if you look at these reactions or data which is given, after multiplication and reversing the equations, their enthalpy changes will also get reversed. So what happens? The result is what? We get first equation, if you reverse, then enthalpy change becomes minus 2035 kilojoules per mole. Second equation minus 132, that is minus 132, meaning that 3H2O, you have multiplied it by 3 and delta H value also get multiplied and the sign also changes. Now the 3H2O liquid is changing into 3H2 plus 3 by 2 O2 gas. So this is third equation also. We have reversed it and we have multiplied by 3. So finally 2B plus 3H2 B2H6. So when we add these equations after reversing and multiplying with suitable coefficients, we get new equations which are already written here. When we add these equations and cancel out the common terms on both the sides, we get the enthalpy of formation of B2O3, that is minus 1273 kilojoules per mole. Okay, now let us move on to the limitations of first law of thermodynamics. Because first we have to understand the limitations and then we can move on to the development of how the second law of thermodynamics explained certain things which the first law of thermodynamics could not. The limitations are what? For instance, the first law fails to explain why heat flows from hot end to cold end and when a metallic rod is heated at one end and not on the other and vice versa. Meaning, it says that total energy remains constant and if there is loss of energy, then it says that there is some other form of energy which is created there and therefore the total energy of the universe is constant. So, it doesn't tell us about the direction. See, why hot to cold only, why not from cold to hot, like that. So first law only quantifies the energy transfer that takes place during this process. It is impossible to construct a machine that can continuously supply mechanical work without consuming an energy simultaneously. So it is we know that 100% efficient machines are not possible. So it is impossible that the 100% it should work without giving any energy. So such a hypothetical machine is known as a perpetual machine of the first kind. So these type of machines violate the first law of thermodynamics and do not exist in reality. Some more examples we can see: a cup of hot coffee left in a cooler room eventually cools off. The reverse of this process, coffee getting hotter as a result of heat transfer from a cooler room, does not take place. Consider heating of a room by passage of electric current through an electric resistor, and transferring of heat from room will not cause electrical energy to be generated through the wire. So this is also, it's not supported. Consider a paddle wheel mechanism operated by fall of mass. Potential energy of mass decreases and internal energy of the fluid increases. So reverse process does not happen, although this would not violate first law that is there. Water flows down hill whereby potential energy is converted into kinetic energy. So reverse, the reverse flow does not occur unless the energy is supplied, otherwise it won't happen. So these are the limitations. So we can conclude that processes proceed in certain direction and not in the reverse direction. So first law places no restriction on direction. It says that total energy of the universe is constant. That's it. So the process will not occur unless it satisfies both the first and second law of thermodynamics. So second law not only identifies the direction of process, it also asserts that energy has quality as well as quantity. So before discussing second law, let us understand the meaning of spontaneity. Spontaneity, see, there are many reactions, many phenomena which are occurring in nature that are spontaneous. You can see in this picture. Okay. Yes. So the process which has natural tendency to occur, either by its own or after initiation under given set of conditions. So there may be a possibility that reaction takes place by its own. There is no need of initiation. There may be some reactions where we have to initiate the reaction, then it takes place, or under given set of conditions only the reaction is spontaneous. Otherwise it is not spontaneous. So reaction may only be reversed when external energy is applied. So the process takes place in one direction, and if we have to reverse it, we have to give some energy. Chemical reactions which are spontaneous at given conditions are also called feasible process. So spontaneous processes are also called feasible process. So we can see some examples here, like evaporation of water, which doesn't need any initiation, takes place on its own, and dissolution of sugar in water to form a solution. So if you leave like that, after some time, it may take some time, but then it gets dissolved. Then precipitation reactions, which are very fast reactions, and when suppose barium chloride is mixed with sodium sulfate and we get barium sulfate, which is again a spontaneous process. There are some processes which need some initiation, like when we combine H2 and O2, some electric spark is required, so it gets combined and it forms H2O. Coal burns to form carbon dioxide. So these are examples of spontaneous process which may need initiation or which may not need initiation. But there are some processes which has no natural tendency or urge to occur. They are called as non-spontaneous process, non-feasible process. These processes may made to occur when energy from external source is supplied continuously throughout the change. The pumping of water to the tank. Continuously we have to provide energy, and as long as you are providing energy, the process will happen. Otherwise it won't happen. Similarly, electrolysis of water, when you pass electricity, it will happen. Okay, it will break and it forms compounds. So we can see some key points of spontaneous process. It occurs on its own, not concerned with the rate of reaction. Doesn't tell us about the speed of the reaction. It happens, that's it. Proceeds in one direction and continues till equilibrium is achieved. So this process will continue till the equilibrium is reached. So that is called spontaneous process. Yes, so general assumption is what spontaneous reaction takes place in a direction in which energy of the system is lowered. That means we can say that exothermic reaction, when the reaction takes place, heat is lost to the surrounding, system will have lower energy, and that is actually a spontaneous reaction. But there are exceptional cases. We know that ice melts by absorbing heat. Okay, then NaCl dissolves in water by absorbing heat. So some endothermic reactions are there which are spontaneous. So we will be discussing why so. So now we know what is spontaneity and what is spontaneous reaction. So second law of thermodynamics says that total entropy of the system and its surrounding increases in a spontaneous process. So children, that means in universe, whatever processes which are occurring, that is actually moving because it is spontaneous, and the total entropy change. What is this entropy actually? We will be discussing in detail in our next module. The entropy is actually degree of randomness. So how much disorderness is there? So we will discuss that. So it says that total entropy of the system and surrounding constitute the total entropy of the universe. That should always be more. The randomness should be more. The disorderness should be more. So in detail, we will study about entropy in our next module. Thank you.